You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, an infectious disease expert recently issued a warning about the dangers of chronic wasting disease. CWD has been around for nearly 50 years, and it's been reported in 24 states, including Wisconsin. It attacks the brains of deer, elk, moose, and caribou. It's always fatal. So far, the disease has not spread to people, but Michael Osterholm of the University of Minnesota told state lawmakers earlier this month that he thinks it's just a matter of time.
Probable that human cases of chronic wasting disease associated with consumption of chronic wasting disease contaminated meat will be documented in the years ahead. It's possible the number of human cases will be substantial and will not be isolated events.
So what do we know about CWD and its risks? Brian Richards is the Emerging Disease Coordinator at the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wildlife Health Center, which is based in Madison. Brian, thanks a lot for joining us in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that question raised right now, CWD, not something that has affected people yet, according to that person. Is this something that is on your radar?
Well, the impacts, the potential human impacts of chronic wasting disease are always going to be on a radar screen. And, you know, Dr. Osterholm has a great reputation, and certainly he's entitled to his professional opinions regarding what will happen in the future. My position, I try and follow the science wherever I go. And so when we look to what's really out there, we can say definitively there are no known cases where CWD has crossed that species barrier into a human host. And we can look at the bulk of the science, the bench science that's been done to date, and it's what we would term an open question. Some researchers have been able to push CWD across that species barrier into a model of human health. Others have failed to do so. So it's kind of an open question. So to say it's going to definitively or it's not going to definitively is beyond the scope of what science can support today.
We'll spend most of our time talking about what we do know about CWD and in deer and other animal populations in the United States. I want to bring up something that's been in the headlines. This has been in the news a lot lately. We keep seeing it headlined, zombie deer disease. Watching this thing in Wisconsin for a long time, it struck me as sensationalistic, and you too, it sounds like.
Yeah, the first time I saw this term, I think it was between 1, maybe 2 years ago. And, you know, I guess it was likely, a title writer or, someplace in the media where I guess my best guess would be that it was sensationalistic, trying to draw attention to features of this disease. But from the wildlife health perspective, when you look at these animals are suffering from a progressive neurological degeneration. And when they reach that stage where, they've lost fear of humans, the low head, the drooling behavior, they're very near death. So the term zombie disease really does not describe the clinical profile of these animals, and I'm not sure whether it really helps the conversation. As you noted, it's a very, very important disease to keep track of, to monitor, both in animals and, other potential impacts, but name changes, I guess in my humble opinion, really don't help us much.
Well, give us the basics. We've talked about CWD a lot on this network over the years. Give us the basics of what it is.
Okay, chronic wasting disease, or CWD, is a member of this family of diseases called transmissible spongiform encephalopathies, or short TSEs. To the best of our knowledge and scientific evidence, they're caused by a malformed protein, a protein that we all produce in our body that has been transitioned into a disease-associated form. When these disease-associated prion proteins congregate in the brain, they form into starchy plaques, and these plaques are associated with neuronal death. So that's where we get that progressive neurological degeneration. As the population of neurons in your central nervous system decreases, you lose the ability ultimately, to be alive. So CWD is just one example of these diseases. There's a number of TSEs in mammals. In humans, we think of Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. In domestic livestock, we've got two good examples. One in cattle is bovine spongiform encephalopathy, which the media referred to as mad cow disease. And we also have scrapie, a disease in domestic sheep, which has been known for over 300 years. So with regard to CWD, that's the only member of this family that's ever been reported in free-ranging wildlife. And we now have evidence of it in our North American members of the deer family, including white-tailed deer, mule deer, elk, moose, and reindeer or caribou.
Talking to Brian Richards, Emerging Disease Coordinator at the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wildlife Health Center, looking at chronic wasting disease in Wisconsin and beyond. Can you talk about the state of CWD, Brian, here in Wisconsin?
I sure can. So we picked it up, or the state of Wisconsin picked it up due to surveillance, looking at dead animals, hunter-killed animals. They picked up the first two cases back in 2002. Since that point in time, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has done an exemplary job of conducting surveillance. They've looked at over 230,000 animals, hunter-killed and other samples in that intervening period. And, you know, we picked it up initially in western Dane County. Now in free-ranging white-tailed deer, it's been picked up in 25 separate counties. And if you look at game farms or captive cervid operations, that adds an additional 8 counties to the count. This last year is very interesting. You know, in all time since we picked up CWD in the state of Wisconsin, we found some 5,000, a little over 5,000 positives. Over 1,000 of those were detected last year. So interesting trends we've observed here in Wisconsin. Number one is an expanding geographic footprint or spread of disease. The second is in those core areas. And what I'm talking about is kind of where Iowa, Dane, Sauk, and Richland counties come together, a little ways west of here. We've seen an increase in prevalence or the proportion of each animal unit being affected. So you get over in that core area just south of Spring Green, and if you look at adult males, so bucks, 2.5 years and older, the prevalence or proportion positive is between 40% and 50%. So you think about that from a disease perspective. So if you go out there hunting or wildlife watching and you're fortunate enough to see, you know, a big adult male, take a coin out of your pocket, flip it up in the air, and that's the chances that each individual animal has this always been fatal, contagious neurological disorder.
The trend here seems to be spreading in area, this disease, and it sounds like you're saying deepening in concentration over time. Is that what we're seeing across the country?
We see, we're definitely seeing impacts of geographic spread. In areas where the disease has been known the longest, we see clear evidence of increasing prevalence. And the other thing that we see, and we now have peer-reviewed science supporting this in white-tailed deer, mule deer, and in elk, that where the disease has been long enough and when prevalence gets high enough, we start seeing disease absolutely impact herd performance and, in a couple instances, driving herd decline. So spreading, growing, and population impacts in the cervid host. Those are the key features.
Now, as I understand, these proteins, these prions, you know, these aren't viruses, they aren't bacteria, which means you can't do a vaccine, there's no antiviral, antibiotics, they're all irrelevant. That said, what have we done? What strategies have been tried to stop this?
Okay, well, we saw something here. Early intervention attempts by the state of Wisconsin was aggressive response, trying to dramatically lower the deer population in hopes that if you got the deer population low enough, you would interrupt the disease transmission cycle on the ground. So if you lower population and you have diseased animals out there, certainly you're going to remove some diseased animals. These animals are no longer capable of shedding infectious agent out into the environment. They're no longer capable of directly transmitting disease to other animals. And they're no longer capable of dispersing, moving 10, 20 miles down the road and establishing a new focus of disease there. So reducing deer population is an important tool that we have available. Now, that was not very popular in the state of Wisconsin. It hasn't been popular elsewhere. We think about the users of natural resources, hunters, folks that like to, you know, feed deer to attract them, to watch them. Those are great things. So now we have folks that enjoy natural resources in a way that they and their families have always been able to enjoy. And now because of disease, we're asking those folks, those great folks, to change their behaviors to try and preserve this resource for future generations. And the pushback has been fairly steady and dramatic. Here in Wisconsin, the pushback led to legislative maneuvers which in essence forced the DNR to back down from aggressive management techniques. And we've seen the results of that. A few years ago, we had a deer trustee hired in the state of Wisconsin who suggested a more passive approach to CWD. And I think the documented change in distribution we see on the ground is proof positive that passive leads to more disease.
We're talking about chronic wasting disease in Wisconsin's deer population and beyond. He's the with Brian Richards, Emerging Disease Coordinator at the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wildlife Health Center. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a hunter? Do you eat venison? Are you worried about CWD? What do you think of the job the state is doing trying to manage the spread of chronic wasting disease? Are there things that you think we should be doing that we aren't? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about chronic wasting disease. Brian Richards is our guest. He's the Emerging Disease Coordinator at the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wildlife Health Center based in Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about this disease in Wisconsin's deer herd? And what questions do you have about it or how the state is managing it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls now. Jay is with us in Birchwood. Jay, hi.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. Kind of a two-pronged question or comment, and the guest has kind of touched on both of them. The baiting and feeding of wild deer. I live in northern Wisconsin, and for years I have been trying to get folks to realize that it is a dangerous practice because congregating any wild animal like that is going to have consequences. And I just wanted to get your guest take on kind of our reactive rather than proactive, you know, this business of banning baiting and feeding in a county only after deer have been discovered with the disease makes no sense to me.
Jay, thanks a lot for the call. Baiting and feeding of deer, Brian.
So to start with, you know, I want to clarify that policy issues and regulatory maneuvers put in place in the state of Wisconsin are the prerogative of the state of Wisconsin. I'm a federal authority, and I try to provide science-based evidence and support to the state when they request it. So with regard to feeding and baiting, what we're looking at is artificially congregating animals in space and time. So if all the animals are completely healthy, likely not a bad practice. But now if we put one animal who's actively shedding infectious agent, you know, disease-associated prion protein, into the mix, then we're definitely enhancing. We call that an amplification risk, and we're greatly increasing the risk of transmission in that space and time.
Thanks a lot for the call, Jay. We'll go next to Mike with us in Mauston. Mike, hi.
Hello there. How are you guys?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Mike?
Okay, I wanted to ask, I guess, with the increased numbers of positive deer, if I harvested deer, would you recommend still eating that deer even though I sent a test in and it came back negative?
Well, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. So I am not a human health expert, so I'm not going to give you human health advice, but I will defer to what the U.S. Centers for Disease Control does give advice, and it's out there on their website, easy to find. So their guidance for hunters is if you hunt in an area where CWD is known to exist, that you, the hunter, strongly consider having that deer or elk tested. But then there's no bones. If it comes back positive, they recommend not consuming any portion or any tissues from that animal. So now part of your question led to, you know, if that animal tests negative or not detective. Certainly there is a possibility, and we know that there are false negative tests. So even if that animal comes back not detected, there is a small chance that that animal is CWD positive. But now on the bright side, the only false negative results out there are when an animal is very early in the course of disease. And therefore, the chances that disease-associated prion protein has been deposited in tissues you're going to eat in venison are very, very low. So the tests that are available through the DNR are really solid tests. If it's positive, it's absolutely positive. The CDC says don't eat it. And if it's negative, you have a high degree of comfort about the disease state of that animal and the minimal risk it poses.
And a key point, thanks a lot for that call. You can't look at a deer, alive or dead, and know whether it has CWD.
Not until the very end stage of disease. We, you know, in your typical deer, the incubation period, the time from infection to the time that animal dies is someplace in the neighborhood of 2 years. And that animal looks and acts, at least to our eyes, very healthy. His behavior is normal, looks great. Right up until the end, maybe 18, 20, 22 months, it looks and acts perfectly healthy. Remember, it's a progressive neurological degeneration. So we only see those clinical signs at the very end of disease. So no, you can't tell by looking at a deer.
Let's go to another caller now. Russ is with us in Neenah. Russ, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Russ?
Well, I believe that game farms have spread this disease throughout the country. Why are they continued to allow to be open?
Russ, thanks for the call. There's been a lot of attention to the role of game farms where deer are brought together and then hunted on that land. What have you seen?
Well, it's interesting. In the state of Wisconsin, I believe right now we've had detected CWD in 26 separate captive cervid facilities. In the entire lower 48, we've had, I think, 105 or 106. So literally one out of four positive game farms has been here in the state of Wisconsin. Now, certainly because, you know, the business model includes movement of live animals, we have strong supporting evidence that game farms have moved CWD around the landscape. But they're certainly not the only cause. Game farms, as part of the question was, why are they allowed? Well, again, that's a question that needs to be dealt with by the legislatures of various states. It's a lawful activity in Wisconsin currently and has been for many, many years. So that's why they're out there. Now, if you could wave a magic wand and think that, I'll get rid of all the game farms and that's going to make CWD go away, you'd be sadly mistaken.
There has been talk about efforts, and there was briefly an emergency rule that got shot down requiring more fencing, double fencing, to prevent those captive populations from coming into contact with wild populations. How big a factor is that?
So the idea there is that if you have a single fence separating captive deer and wild deer, that there's a great chance for contact, nose-to-nose contact, which could lead to shedding infectious agent between one side of the fence or the other. So by putting up a second barrier, some 8-10 feet, something like that apart, it precludes the opportunity for that nose-to-nose contact. But we have seen examples, one right in Iowa County, where a captive facility that had a double fence, CWD showed up inside of that fence. So we know that even having a double barrier is not an absolute. But is it better than a single fence from an epidemiological standpoint? Yes.
Talking to Brian Richards, wildlife disease expert at the U.S. Geological Survey, talking about chronic wasting disease in deer in Wisconsin. Back to your calls. Mark is with us in Waukesha. Mark, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. No, I'm thrilled to hear you guys talking about this. And my hope is with the new governor and a new head of the DNR that things will take place at a much more rapid and aggressive fashion. During the tenure of Scott Walker, he had a planted Kathy Stepp at one point, which is a real step back for the state of Wisconsin. She was quoted as saying that CWD is not a concern and it's a waste of the DNR's time.
Mark, thanks for the call. I know you probably don't want to dive too far into the politics here, but what would you suggest when it comes to more proactive things that Mark is looking for?
Well, certainly, the idea that CWD is not a serious disease, that's an opinion. And I would argue that the data, the science, does not support that opinion. I would argue that the data and the science supports that CWD is a very, very serious issue. Just looking at the spread and the increase in prevalence here in the state of Wisconsin, and just the idea that, doing the surveillance, the hunter-based surveillance last year, the DNR was able to pick up over 1,000 positives. That's a pretty big number, and lends some credibility that, hey, this is not nothing.
Are we doing enough research, apart from the management efforts, are we doing enough research into what this disease is and how it spreads?
Well, I guess I would have to argue, and quite selfishly, that there's never enough research being done. You mentioned earlier, we don't have vaccines, we don't have therapeutics, we don't have great tools. And the only way we will change that dynamic is by investing in research into this disease.
Do you feel a sense of urgency from Wisconsin and other states and from the federal government and from hunters, for that matter?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think there's a lot of camps out there, and there are certainly folks that believe that Wisconsin has wasted a lot of time and money. But again, I don't believe that the disease supports that. So, you know, if we are to be successful, what we need to do is get accurate, valid scientific information into the hands of the stakeholders. And those stakeholders have to decide how the state of Wisconsin and other states want to proceed. And they do that through the ballot.
Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That's Brian Richards, Emerging Disease Coordinator at the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wildlife Health Center. We talked with him about chronic wasting disease, whether it could affect humans, and how the state is managing the spread of that illness among the white-tailed deer population. So far, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says there have been no reports of CWD in people.